Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Shooter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I have my co-host Frank Gal here, and I have three special guests. Before I get into naming them all, I just wanted to say this. So recently, the United States sent a delegation to Thailand to represent the IPSC World Shotgun Shoot. The Open Division competitors represented the U.S. well by coming in second place, and Scott Green, who is with us tonight, came in first overall. We have returning guest Lan Nguyen, and other first-timer to the podcast, and the second half of Dissident Arms, Mike Whitesides. Scott, can you give a quick introduction about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Scott Green. I'm from Reno, Nevada. I started shooting around 2014, 2015, that kind of area. Started shooting IPSC in 2016, shot the first Shotgun World Shoot 2018. Fast forward to today. I'm happy to be working with Mike and Lan at Dissident, and was happy to represent them, and you know, honored to represent them in the U.S. at this most recent Shotgun World Shoot in Pattaya, Thailand.
Awesome. And Mike, can you go ahead and give a quick introduction?
Yeah, as you alluded to, I'm also one of the co-founders of Dissident Arms, and as I tell everybody, we're shooters first. That's kind of what got us in this business, and so I also was on the men's open team in Thailand with Scott and Lan, and our fourth guy, Ruben, and basically we just got back from shooting the IPSC Shotgun World Shoot with our shotguns. These things are basically what we built our business around over the last 10 years or so, and we were able to take those things to the world stage. Scott was able to do what he does best, which is pull a trigger, and you know, he really knows the game, so he was able to maintain the men's open overall gold medal for the United States. He was able to continue that legacy for Dissident Arms. We appreciate that, and continue that legacy for the United States.
Hell yeah. No, that's awesome shit right there. I do have one question that's completely unrelated. And the first time whenever we brought Lan on, you know, in the introduction, I alluded to like how irresistible it was to run your fingers through his hair whenever, and you know, how it just flies in the wind and everything.
Fucking A. Yeah.
Mike, yeah. Mike, do you ever have any issues not wanting to just grab him by the hair?
No, I know better. I don't have any urges, but so I'm good to go. Now, you on the other hand, I'm sure I couldn't speak for you though. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm not around him nearly as much. So next time yeah, we're all yeah. together.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Well, if you're going to get stabbed.
You'd never touch the Mona Lisa, would you?
Yeah.
Let me think about that. So on a serious note, I got to ask, how involved was USPSA throughout this whole process? And what was communication like between them as an organization and then you guys as a team? Mike, we'll start with you on that.
Yeah. Let's just say compared to last time, there was actually some improvement. I can't say that it was overall what I would really want. You know, I feel like that shotgun is 1/3, if even with PCC now, maybe 1/4 of what Action Shotgun is and what USPSA's charter is to represent. And it's our pathway to international competition. That being said, there was some direct contact from the president somewhat early on. But the thing was is that we were supposed to have a qualifying match laid out for us all the way from the last world shoot and prior to that. The thing is, it's supposed to happen. It just hasn't been happening. And unfortunately, you know, the USPSA uses the metrics they got, which is basically what are your performances at USPSA sanctioned events. We're talking multi-gun nationals. Maybe if you shot at the last world shoot, at least this time they did use a component of performance and participation as opposed to just participation. Teams were chosen. After that, as far as I know, every slot that the United States got was used. I don't think they requested any additional slots. And then basically USPSA helps in exportation of the ammo. Maybe we could have got a little bit better deal on the price, but at the end of the day, it was there. The ammo was there. Americans had their ammo. A lot of people using match ammo really suffered. So at the end of the day, I feel like the teams were chosen to the best metric possible. I feel like a qualifying match is something that we're going to be a part of in the future. So hopefully we can get it down to where those that really want to compete can see it coming a few years out instead of like, hey, here it is, you know. I will say, though, we were supposed to do this 2 years ago. You know, it got pushed back 2.5 years because of COVID. So, woulda, shoulda, coulda. I still feel like we ended up with the best team. Scott represented well. Lanny Barnes ended up with a gold medal. As for the women, Varick Breeze, gold medal for the juniors. I mean, overall, Lena defended her title. When the Williams sisters got, you know, a silver or a third bronze, they got bronze as a team. I mean, the Americans did really well with how much we were involved with this style of shooting. So, at the end of the day, every American that wanted to go and that was willing to spend the money to go went, and we were able to form some pretty good teams and had some really good individual shooters. So, we made it happen, and you know, my intention is to try to make a more direct pathway for those that want to participate, you know, to participate in the future. So,
no, that's awesome, Matt. Scott, you're all the way out there in Nevada by yourself, and this isn't your first shot doing the IPSC World Shoot. So did you have any direct communication, or did one person kind of lead communication and then filter it out, or did you have direct communication with the USPSA as well?
So I did have some direct communication with Yeman, who was the acting president before he got booted. So he was very, I know Yeman well. He's in the California area. He's about 3 hours from me. So I've shot with him many times and I've talked with him many times. Great guy. I don't know all of his politics inside the organization, but he was very, forward and, you know, asking me if I had to pick, you know, a dream team of who I would pick, who would it be? Okay, well, here's who applied on this very short schedule of application they gave everyone in USPSA. And so there was a good amount of communication until he got removed from office. And then after that, it was rough. It was very rough for a while. But, you know, we figured it out eventually. And I'm still happy with the team we sent and all the representatives we had. But as far as USPSA is concerned, I think they could have still done, you know, miles better than they did, but it was better than previous years. So,
no, that's good to hear. It's good to hear that it's starting to take a step in the right direction. And I just hope is, you know, between social media, you know, and all the interfaces that we have, you know, it stays fresh in everybody's minds and just continues to grow and get better with the way we apply different systems and put those in place.
Yeah.
So logistically, this is a big movement, you know, transporting weapons and ammunition and people over to Thailand. You got to plan for guns, ammunition to get moved. What was the process to getting the guns and ammo in and out of Thailand? And were there any hiccups or unforeseen issues along the way? And then what was your planning timeline in order to ensure everything went as smooth as possible? Lan, start with you.
I think we started
talking about the exportation of the ammo. It was probably around April or something like that. And that's when Troy was working through it with USPSA. And it was kind of a strung out process. I believe he was involved with, you know, two national matches during that timeline as well. And so their attention span was kind of strung out and thin at that time. Yeoman was removed at that same time. So everything was kind of strained. So we started working on it then. Mike and I had worked out a deal with Federal to get, you know, ammunition for our team and then anybody that was interested in the same SKUs. And so we kind of organized that and got that to our exporter. Now, after that, you know, it was basically up to them, and they did get our ammo over there. We were very fortunate to do that too, because the match ammo ended up being shit. And so, I think there's 60 shooters that didn't get any ammo that they ordered over there. And then a lot of other shooters that were having issues with it. So, it was a little bit of effort, but it went a long way, I think, for as far as putting the U.S. delegation, you know, forward on the right foot. So, But
as far as traveling with the guns, though, the permitting was done was so because there's a national or a world competition going on. Yeah. The governing body there in Thailand for their match basically notified the government that they have a bunch of shooters coming in. They also fast tracked our permitting, so to speak. They had right. A guy that could speak English and that dealt with us over there. So as far as the IPSC, they actually worldwide, they have kind of have their I'm sure they have their own things going on, but they seem to have their shit together, so to speak. Yeah. Meaning that there is a pretty easy to use website to where we uploaded our credentials, and we were able to download our weapon permits. And then once we travel with them, you go to your local Customs and Border Patrol, and then they fill out a form with your serial numbers. And then whenever you travel, you know, depending on what country you go through, you may have to show your credentials for those. And then once you arrived in Thailand, you had to like take your guns in this office that the long gun wouldn't fit in, and you had to like show them your serial numbers, you know. And then kind of the same thing happened on the way out on the way back home. So it's not terribly difficult. I've heard it's harder if there's not a major match going on at the time, or like a world level match, meaning that if you're going there just to shoot like something smaller, you need to like basically really work with the governing body there to get you a letter that says why you're traveling with firearms. Yeah. So it's a process that was a little bit easier in France than it was Thailand, wouldn't you say, in some ways?
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah,
dramatically so. Different. Yeah.
I wanted to ask Scott that, like, how was it going to France? And the other rifle shoot was in Finland, right? Or was it Sweden?
Scott's been more places. Sweden.
How was that process there, Scott, going to Sweden and to France?
It really wasn't that different. But once you arrive, it became a little different. So this one was what I would expect. You show up. You go pick up your guns, you go to customs, they look at it, then you work your way through. France was not that. France, you grabbed your gun case from oversized baggage, and then we had to go find the customs office while hauling around, you know, a couple of shotguns. And then, you know, there was nobody there waiting for us. Our guns were just sitting there basically in baggage claim where anyone could have grabbed them. And that was interesting. Sweden was more similar to France, but nothing quite like France. France was a little unique. Thailand was more what I would expect.
I remember a few years back, I was traveling out to Okinawa, Japan, and me and Chris Scott and others were transporting some SIG M18 pistols because over in Oki, they hadn't even received those yet. For the Marines out there. So we were letting Marines play with them before they eventually got them. And so we hit the airport, or when we were leaving the airport in Okinawa, and then also in mainland Japan, like they were like, they wanted to, they had us open up the case. then they started pulling the pistols out in front of everybody and inside the entire airport and just started like racking them and all that. We're like, we're just like, no, this ain't it. This ain't cool.
Yeah. I've had similar experiences elsewhere. But I don't want to repeat those.
You know, kind of shifting gears a little bit, because I think, you know, Scott, Lan, you know, Mike, we're all three gunners. It's one of our passions. It's something that kind of keeps us going. But I think we can all kind of agree it's gotten a little bit stagnant. And I'm not saying that we're hemorrhaging people, but we're not necessarily growing the sport. Do you think part of it could be the lack of imagination and the use of shotgun for some of the matches? And do you believe that we could take lessons from the IPSC community and what you saw at World Shoot, you know, between slugs, buckshot, birdshot, and apply it to multi-gun matches here in the U.S.? Mike.
Yeah. Well, regarding three gun, I mean, I think three gun's just in some way is stagnant, or it's just suffered like a lot of areas in life and so forth did. I think during the COVID nonsense and so forth, that there was a lot of people like retired early, so to speak, from our sport. And then there wasn't an influx of people coming in, you know, not the new shooter camps, not the, you know, no new clubs probably were being established at that time and so forth. And also, depending on who you are, the quality of three gun in your local area, or if you have any, then either it's enough for you and you don't travel to go shoot, or you don't have any in your area and you maybe have fallen out of the sport, you know? And so, unfortunately, I think that it kind of, you know, contracted a little bit over the last couple of years. But at the same time, I think that's just going to be an ebb and flow of the sport, you know, that we'll kind of see that hopefully, there are, people that are wanting to establish themselves more in USPSA, which is, it's the path to world shoot. It's the path to world competition. You know, the way the world sees three gun, you know, our three guns that we like to shoot on every single stage, they see them as individual guns. And that's the way the sports are administered and so forth. So, I think, you know, regarding use of shotgun and three gun and so forth, I like one gun stages, not on every stage, but I think that every major match should have an all shotgun stage, a highly technical all shotgun stage. They should have an all rifle stage, also highly technical all rifle stage, and they should have an all pistol stage, stressing all three guns in their individual skill sets all the way to the maximum that they can be. And then having all three guns on every single stage from there forth, not like a two gun match or anything like that, which is a lot of the big formula that you see that major matches are broken down to, is that they're like two gun stages. And you get like 10 or 12 of them, but they end up being two gun stages. And so anyways, I love mixed loads. You won't see that overseas, you know, or an IPSC, but slugs, buckshot, and bird all on one stage. You could totally do it safely. And then, in my opinion, match directors just don't know enough about buckshot. They think it's more dangerous than it is. And it could be totally used a lot in three gun. And it's a super dynamic element that allows you to like reach out with your shotgun, or, you know, score on paper with it, potentially moving targets and so forth. So I definitely think we get that three gun should spice it up, especially for the, some of the match fees that are being charged these days. So, you know, the targetry should be top notch. Presentation should be top notch. And I do believe in one gun stages within a major match. So, yeah.
Scott, you have anything to add?
I agree with everything Mike said. I do think that three gun in the U.S. is stagnant. It is, but I don't think it's because of a lack of innovation in three gun matches or any kind of stage designs. I think it's because the whole industry has more of a competitive versus tactical mindset, and so getting those two to blend is more of the problem than putting matches on the ground. So if we could find a way to incorporate, you know, the tactical aspect of shooting and the competitive aspect, much like what Max is doing with the PCSL league, you know, that's a good way to get a lot more people into it very quickly. And it, I think that's a pretty good way to go about it.
Lan, what do you got?
I think that, you know, basically we can implement some of these concepts into to 3-Gun, and I think we should. But I also think that, you know, like Mike alluded to in the beginning, the contraction to 3-Gun, you know, really was based off of the whole COVID thing. And then that kind of, I think that also sprung up some local matches that pushed them to make their local shooting better. And so some people didn't find the value in having to travel to mobilize, get all that, spend all of that money, because I got a good enough match here. Right. And so I think all those are kind of what, and there was a period in time where there was a shitload of major 3-Gun matches. And so yep. You had to pick and choose there. And so I think we kind of, you know, took something that was growing at a good clip, and then we diluted it so much that a lot of people just kind of floated away.
I call those major minors. Like, you had so many minor major matches that, you know, you didn't have to, like you said, you didn't have to travel.
Yeah.
They were good. Yep. They were good enough.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately the barrier to entry to 3-Gun, it's not an inexpensive sport. So, you know, it depending on what you're going to, spend your disposable income on and so forth, the cost of ammunition, sometimes the access to local 3-Gun, depending on your area and so forth. It's not an easy thing to be involved in. And then also, I always say it's that we really test, legitimate 3-Gun, you really test your shooting skills, and not everybody's up for that. So some guys will come in, come out, others, you know, find a love for it depending on whatever their skill level is. But it's something that the game is constantly elevating. And unless you're like going to elevate with it, or you enjoy it no matter what, it's something that is going to constantly test you. The level of competition I've seen in 3-Gun, like if somebody were to exit a few years back, or some of the early names that we could rattle off, so forth, that they were to come back now, they would be blown at how much the sport has gotten harder, over the years. So the skill has definitely elevated. And just in Thailand, this world shoot was significantly more difficult than the last one, more technical, a lot more moving targets. Tons more moving targets. And so it's an evolving thing, you know? And so, but that's just how you, this is the way sports are. You know, if you want them to evolve, they're going to be harder, and they're not going to be what you always knew. But hopefully we can continue to figure out how to make it interesting for those that want to come in and come up within it.
So, well, it also requires involvement too, because you see a lot of people nowadays are like, they have the attitude, well, I just want to show up, pay my money, and shoot. They don't get involved with the local matches. And that's where, you know, you can actually grow the community, and that's where you actually make an impact, I think. And so we need more people to kind of pick up take the baton, if you
will. That'll always be the toughest side of it. And Scott knows, he builds matches where he's at. We still do matches where we're at. So it's the toughest part.
You know, one of the ideas, and I was talking to Alex Goking about this past week, and we probably had an hour-long conversation just talking about involvement, matches, you know, building the community, stage designs. And one of the things I was thinking of doing is, like, we talk about the barrier to entry, and one of the things that really, you know, you hear all the time, well, I don't want to learn how to shoot shotgun, or, you know, it's just it's super expensive to add another gun and everything. And so I was thinking, you know, one of the things I can do is, you know, there are budget shotguns out there. And I was going to, you know, one of the things I'm thinking is reaching out to one of those companies and be like, hey, can you donate a couple shotguns to me so I can do this, so I can bring more people into the game? That way, if somebody well, I don't want to shoot 3-Gun, I'd rather just shoot a 2-Gun. Well, I have a shotgun you could use. Just bring the ammo, go out, shoot. You can use it the entire match, just like loaner guns. So people, you get them, you give them that bug, and then as you show them how, you know, you already have 2 out of the 3 guns. This isn't that much more of a cost, unless, you know, we go into another level. but just to give them that start. I think that's one way to do it, to help bring more people in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, getting somebody behind a shotgun is always the best way, because usually they'll end up enjoying it. So,
yeah. like Alex straight up says, and Alex was a USPSA shooter whenever he came to the team. Like, he got to the team and I was like, you're over on the 3-gun team now, man. He's like, what? I don't know how to shoot shotgun. Now the dude just loves shooting shotgun. He's like, my favorite. That's my favorite weapon, you know?
Yeah. Depending on obviously if it's allowed in a match, but there's nothing that can beat a shotgun in an all steel match. Nothing. Not an open shotgun. No way.
And going back to Buckshot, you know, one of the matches where I used to see Buckshot all the times at a major was Blue Ridge 3-gun championship. Andy used to incorporate Buckshot into that match. And it was, like you said, it's just a completely different dynamic.
All shotgun stage at Superstition Mountain in 2022, I believe. Down in Florida at the USPSA Multigun Nationals, that you were supposed to only use buckshot on the swinging targets, the paper target, or they say swinging targets. I can't remember if they were movers or not, but they were paper. Were two A scored. But then they ended up saying you could use buckshot on the whole stage because they couldn't determine whether you were going to shoot buckshot on other targets or not. And so I ended up I shot the whole stage buckshot, and it was fucking amazing.
That's pretty cool. That's almost like shooting an all slug stage. We had a guy on our squad shoot all slug. Like you could have shot rifle, pistol, and shotgun. He said, screw it. You know what? I spent $200 on slug ammo. I'm going to get my money's worth on this one stage. And he shot the entire stage with freaking slug. It was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah. Second match that Landon and I ever went to was this match that was called the Nordic Component Practical Shotgun Challenge. It was in Sparta, Illinois. Yep. And Noveski sponsored this stage. And it was literally like a USPSA stage with paper targets, and it was one on paper with walls and it was all slug, and it was like one of the second matches we ever went to, and it had that, and I've like never seen it at a match ever again, but it was amazing. Yeah, it was like, you know, like 22 rounds of slugs, you know, 22 targets, one shot each, you know. So
there's $1, $2, $3, $4.
Yeah, I mean, back then, back then, 75 cents. But yeah. And I was shooting 1600s, of course, you know, so it was stupid.
Your shoulder took a beating.
Yeah, well, you know, the big ass comp. So, but yeah. Yeah,
you're good. Fuck it. Why not?
But so, yeah.
So, obviously, you guys are the shotgun guys. So, what are your thoughts on all shotgun matches? And do you see an appetite for that here in the U.S.? And I know Donnie tried reinvigorating it last year, and it really didn't take like he wanted to. But do you think it can be done in a successful manner? And what would you what would take that?
I do. Yeah, I do. So Lan and I, we've been running local matches for some time. We've tried a lot of different formats and so forth. And this last year, we were running multi-gun once a month. And then on the September match, we ran an all shotgun match. We ran it multi-gun rules, but we made it to where you had some essentially short or medium and long courses of fire. And then we took a bay and split it up into two strings and made two short courses of fire. So we were able to still kind of mimic what you would see in IPSC, where they have short, medium, and long courses of fire. We weren't running hit factor, which means you'd have to run IPSC rules. But long story short, we ran an all shotgun match, trying to basically test some potentially nonsense. a format for a USPSA IPSC qualifying match. So it's our intention in September this year, the first weekend of September this year. We need to make an official announcement on it, but it's to run an all shotgun match again, making this an annual thing, Dissident Arms as the title sponsor. It would obviously be open to anyone that wants to come. I feel like we have enough customers that would be interested in it, that we could make the match at least viable for an annual thing. Hopefully it grows into something, but I'm kind of surprised Donnie didn't get a little bit more traction with the shotgun match out east. I'm not sure exactly what the reason behind that was. But I remember traveling more than once to the Nordic component tactical shotgun match in Minnesota before it changed to Trigun, and like wanting to go to that match, and that match was like a sellout match. It just more transitioned into Trigun whenever JP got involved and Nordic started making rifles, I think.
But you went to that Benelli IPSC match a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was pretty successful. It had 100 or so people in there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is you may not be able to get the numbers right off the bat, but we have a vested interest in wanting to make Action Shotgun more of a standalone thing. I think it's a ton of fun to shoot on its own. I think there are enough shooters. It's just how spread out are we, and are we willing to travel, to a shotgun match? So it's
what do you think, Scott? Do you think that we could explain and present IPSC style shotgun shooting and bring, I'm not going to say masses, but successful matches, 150 shooters, I'd say.
I think you 100% can, especially Texas up north, Minnesota, all those guys out east, they can do it. Out west, it's a little more difficult. There's not a lot of shotgun shooting out here, like at all, really. So, yeah. But I refuse to believe there's only 100 people who are interested in IPSC shotgun matches. That's just ridiculous. Yeah. So,
yeah. So the one thing we want to do is we want to make a path to IPSC through having a qualifying match, but then also not turn off those that just want to shoot a fun shotgun match. It's, you don't have to spoon feed somebody like, hey, there's this thing going to be called Hit Factor and you don't understand it and it's going to kick your ass. but what I'm getting at is you can make a fun shotgun match that all skill levels want to shoot. That's also super technical. Gives our style of shooting, a platform. And then the thing is that if there's our people that are truly interested in wanting to come shoot, then there'll be at least that draw, if nothing else. So it's our intention to do another one this year. I hope more match directors are able to pick them up. To me, it's the most versatile gun. You get to shoot basically every style target, which is where you can't do that with rifle and pistol,
Yeah, I actually forgot about a match that happens every year in California. It's called the Californian Action Shotgun Challenge. It happens every year. They get about 120, 150 people every year.
Yeah.
And that's just their standalone Bay Area style match. Like, if you put a national match on, it's going to be, it'd be popular. I think it would be.
Yeah.
What's the typical cost for that match up there in California?
That one, I think it's less than $100.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a level one local USPSA style match. Yeah. But it's been like an annual thing for so long, and they have, loyal customers, so they keep coming back, and we can just get that going, nationally, it'd be a lot better.
Yeah. And at our match, we didn't have really too many people local take advantage of it it's our intention is we have our normal competition divisions. So everybody that's running their race out gear and they want it to meet a particular IPSC or multi-gun division equipment list, so to speak, we'll run that. And then those that have, their different versions of their tactical shotguns and so forth, we have just two different divisions called tactical auto and tactical manual. And so basically any form of auto loading shotgun, no matter what outfit it has on it. And then any form of a manual shotgun, no matter what outfit is on it. One thing that we just haven't had a chance to do is test the capacity limit. So that would be the only way we would kind of equalize the platforms. And then they wouldn't be able to use any type of speed loaders. They would have to use Side saddles, armbands, traditional caddies, you know, with the side stack caddies. And then those would give the guy that's got an M4 with an RMR on it, you know, he's not immediately an open division, you know. The guy that's got an IWI auto loading, you know, TS12 shotgun, you know what I mean? Maybe he can be loaded out to 15, but if the course of fire calls for reload before last shot, you know, he's going to have to stuff one, you know? So anyways, I think there's a ways to get it to where every shotgun can come in and potentially compete and have fun. And then those that are actually there trying to get qualified for a qualifier would have a path to do so. So there'll be at least one shotgun match this year or this coming year. So
nice. No, yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Very neat. Scott, this next question's for you. So, You're the reigning world champ, and I'm looking at these standings, and there's the slimmest of margins between you and second place.
Yeah,
can you walk us through what that felt like as you were shooting? Because the world shoot, every single one of their formats is over like 5 days. You're there for an entire week, so there's so much time for the suspense to build, but also for the mental game to get to your head. So can you walk us through those final couple of days where you knew you were within striking distance?
Yeah, so I don't know why, but I think I'm cursed with winning or losing, you know, at least a couple of major matches a year by less than a single match point. I don't know why it happens. It happened with Josh all 2018. It happens every year, and it's I don't want to say it's fun, but I've gotten used to it. So throughout the week, day one was kind of a, you know, feel your way into the match, just don't mess up kind of day. Day two, push the pedal down a little bit, you know, reassess. Had a couple of hiccups in there middle of the week, but I never really felt out of it. I don't think I was ever behind by more than like 70 or 80 points. So it was always within like a good striking distance. So I didn't feel uncomfortable. And then the very final day, I did start pushing a little hard. Maybe the back half of day four and into day five, I was pushing a little hard. Not out of control, but aggressive. And luckily, you know, the guy who was leading made a couple of hiccups, and that's all I needed to leapfrog up there.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad it worked out. So you guys had a day, like you had one day off, right? 5 days of shooting, one day off? Or
we did not this time. No, we shot straight Monday through Friday. Yeah.
Okay. Never mind then. Well, my next question then is in 2018, right? You still did very respectably, but you watched Josh Frelick ultimately take the gold there. Yep. So this time around, you're on that podium spot. And IPSC World Shoot does a really good job, not with the opening ceremony, but with the podium experience and actually giving the winners their due and the attention. So how did it feel being up there, coming back, like not knowing how this World Shoot experience is going to pan out after COVID and all the other stuff interrupted it?
You know, it kind of surreal. It's still even now hasn't set in fully. You know, the only real moment was sitting there in the hotel room by myself. The wife had gone to bed on Friday night after the match was done and complete. The scores had been put out, and then I had been told I won. I went and take a drug test. Funny story about that. but yeah, I was sitting there on the, you know, patio of this hotel room, and I had a, you know, an hour to myself to sit there and kind of soak it in. But after that, it was kind of a blur of things going on in my head between, you know, the shoot offs happening, and now is this really kind of a real thing? Did this finally happen? It's not a dream kind of thing. It was great. But I refused to check the scores myself from Friday night until the awards ceremony. because, you know, for fear of them changing from when I looked at them. So I had to have, I think, Land on in the van on the way back at one point, pull him up and tell me if it was still a real thing.
Okay. Was that just a joke about a drug test, or was that?
No. So like so the final stage of the final day, we finished our stage out. We all shot pretty good on the last day. We made up a lot of ground as a team. And then, you know, we felt pretty good. We're getting in the van and we're leaving.
We get about, a mile down the exit road or the range, and the group WhatsApp message tells us that I have to go turn around and go back to the pavilion area to take a drug test. So we had the driver turn around because apparently I had one. I had no idea, despite being on the way out of the range.
Okay.
Yeah, they have anti-doping policy, so they're able to call anybody up if they want.
Interesting. Okay,
that's needed, I guess.
Yeah.
It wasn't just some random drug test at a range.
Yeah, they're trying to get it in the Olympics, so it's the pathway hopefully to the Olympics. Maybe.
Is it? I'm guessing Adderall. And some other things that they might be screening for. It's just interesting.
So they follow the straight Olympic testing. Yeah, whatever is banned in the Olympic committee is banned in IPSC.
Everything.
Yeah.
Doping. No. Yeah.
Everything. Yep. All of it.
All of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Leading up to this match, what was your training like? Like, how did you ramp up? Did you kind of taper off knowing that you had all this travel going into the match? How'd you approach that?
So it really started back, March, April-ish, somewhere around that time of the year. My focus back then was on multi-gun nationals, which I think was in June or July, something like that. But after that, I didn't want to burn myself out. So I still shot all the time up until September. Into September, but once October hit, I really put the pedal down real hard. And then I shot, every weekend from October, and then November hit. And then the last two or three weeks of before we left, I was at the range, I think every day of every weekend. And I have a 3-day weekends too. So I was at the range three days a week for at least an hour or 2 hours a day, just training. Just ramping up, working on different things, different weekends. One weekend will be pure speed. One weekend's pure shot calling, pattern recognition, that kind of stuff.
Okay, very cool. Mm-hmm. And then I know you've said that it still hasn't quite sunk in, but have you already thought about the next Shotgun World Shoot?
Oh yeah, I can't wait to get back to the next one. I'm gonna try to repeat it, and I'm gonna try to get Team USA up on the top step. That's 100% what I want.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Open the next question up to all you, but you guys all represented Team USA for the open division. How much communication, I should say, did you guys all have as a team with your various experiences going abroad, knowing the kind of format that they're going to throw at you? Did you guys train with each other at all, or at least swap tips at any point? And Mike and Len, we can start with you guys on this one.
So Land and I, obviously we worked together, and we built a range here at our facility this year, and we utilized that facility to get ready for a lot of matches throughout the year. But in particular, once we shot Memorial 3-gun, after that was over, it was all shotgun. We had a local steel guy make us some swinging steel targets. We built some swinging clay targets ourselves. We've been to World Shoot once before, so we kind of had an idea on what to train, and then watch some Thai national level competitions over there, try to mimic some of what they do. So we definitely put in the work in that regard. With the other guys, unfortunately, Scott's 2 hours behind us or whatever, and too far away. But we did all stay together at Multigun Nationals. Yeah. So Scott stayed at the same place that we were at, and we all were able to squad together and shoot together and watch him do quite well.
Yeah. So Scott, Mike, and I, we've relied on our past experience basically to know what to train for. And then we did, communicate over text and stuff like that, just to, bounce a couple ideas, concepts. What are you training? What's interesting in the matchbooks, stage design, stuff like that. And then we, Ruben was obviously, folded into that conversation as well, because he hadn't had that experience before. And so, I think we did a pretty good job in communicating what to expect and, things that we saw of interest. And so as a team, I think we did well, but, you can always do better, I guess you would say.
Yeah. I wish that we had like a lot of other countries that they'll have like four nationals. And so you have to attend all four nationals. Yeah. I think they may take your best three or something like that. But basically they have like a way that where you end up having to go and mix it up with the people. And then your team's basically chosen based upon the performance and so forth. But also these countries aren't as big as the United States. Typically they're not as spread out and so forth. I think with what was dealt to us, that we all put like our best foot forward, we all trained, you know, Ruben, utilized a Vortex facility there where he's at, to make sure he got his training in. We had our range here. Scott's at the range every day. He's not at work. You know, we came from, quite a few points behind to be within like, you know, 3.5 points of gold. So, our performance, especially the last few days was pretty strong. And, you know, we know more, for next time, you know, honestly, I think if we focused on this as much as some of the other people in the world focus on it, we would just actually run the table on them. So, I mean, I think that it's not our style of shooting. It took me till day three to say, this is fucking Hit Factor. You fucking need to get your ass fucking moving. You know? It's like, even if you're a little sketchy, you've got to be moving fucking faster, you know? Yeah. So, and we're three gun. It's like, no, it's a 5 second penalty. Count to five. You know how much fucking time that is? Just chill out, you know? Yeah. Which is where Hit Factor, it's like, smash it and hopefully you're clean, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you bring up Hit Factor, which actually leads me to my next question. It was a Hit Factor match. They basically adapted the steel. Every single target was adapted into basically an alpha, with the exception, I'm guessing, of the slug targets. Do you think that was the best way to score this style of match?
Yeah, in my opinion, I like Hit Factor. I think it, you know, time versus accuracy, it makes you think about that. It makes you value things differently instead of being like the bludgeon of time plus, you know, just penalty, like just straight 5 and 10 second penalties. Just it, in my opinion, it slows the game down a lot, you know, but, for me, the toughest thing is the short courses of fire, just because I'm not a good, I'm not a good shoot off guy. Scott's an amazing shoot off guy. He's, by the way, the 2-time shoot off champion. He won, shoot off in France. Nice. And, this time in Thailand. But short courses of fire are my weakness. I wish they were all the long courses of fire, more positions, more reloads, more targets. But at the same time, you know, Hit Factor is, it's still only worth as many points as a target. So if you fucking totally fuck up on a short course of fire, it's not the end of the world. But I think a lot of people can't swallow zeroing a stage, which can happen in Hit Factor. And so that's one of the biggest things, explaining to somebody that if you're slow as hell and you fuck up, you're going to get a zero. Right. So, so I think that's why some people really resist Hit Factor, is the fact that they actually can zero. Gotcha. My opinion.
Yeah. I think some people overthink the Hit Factor thing as far as shock is concerned, because for 70% of the stages, it's not even like a factor, because they're all going to shoot the same steel plates. They're all 5 points apiece, and then there's your time. Yeah, there's no shoots out there also, but like, it's not like pistol where there's 20, you know, or, you know, 16 targets and they're all scored twice apiece. It's not the same. So yes, it is still Hit Factor, especially for slugs, when there's two hits on slugs and buckshot on paper. But that's only, you know, less than a third of the match. So it's not as intimidating as it has to be. Just think of it more like a three-gun match, and don't hit no shoots. Yeah. or don't leave a target up, kind of thing. So it doesn't have to be overwhelming. It can be fine, but it is still a thing of just don't leave a target standing, kind of thing.
Okay, fair enough. Land, anything to add, or did they cover it all?
No, I think they pretty much hit it all.
Okay, very cool. So part of you guys going out there, and this question's for Mike and Land, was the to get some interface with all the different shooters that were running your guys' shotguns. So how many, I mean, I think we talked about this before you guys went over to World Shoot Land, but how many out of all the open shooters, what percentage would you estimate were your guys' guns?
About 30-something percent, I would say. We had 25% of the top 25 shooters shooting our guns. And then I know we had a lot of non-national team guys shooting our gun firearms as well. So I didn't do a proper count, I guess you would say, since we've been back. But I think we had a really good, strong showing.
So yeah, I don't have an exact count. I think there's 30-something 30-something dissident open guns in the match, and then there were 7 of them in the top 25. So in France, we had a bit more just because of the geographic nature of some people not traveling out of Europe to go shoot. But as far as, like, you know, we're a speck of a company in the grand scheme of the world, and so for us to have as many guns as we did, perform as well as we did, you know, is amazing. It's actually kind of crazy that, you know, we actually left our previous lives, is what I say, back in 2018, whenever we quit doing our old jobs and our old businesses. And this is what we've done full time for the last 5 years, you know, and so for us to go and compete ourselves on the team, and for Scott to become the world champion, to increase dissident arms position over the worldwide open scene is something that we couldn't write a better story for ourselves. And we plan on this not being the end. I mean, honestly, I already want to shoot the next world shoot. It's going to be in Greece. I myself and Land, maybe Scott will join, plan on doing some traveling next year, shooting internationally. As far as business, you know, we've exported guns to Thailand. So this is actually one of our larger countries. So we were able to visit some of the gun shop there that does our importing. Able to visit a lot of new customers. You know, their national team has changed 3 times over there. They used to all shoot dissident. Now half of them shoot dissident. Dara is a big sponsor over there. And so a lot of them are like bicker over, like, well, who's gonna write you a check? Well, who's gonna shoot the better shotgun, you know? The best shooters and the best guns rose to the top. And then, you know, just guns that we sent to South Africa, like, you know, 7 years ago, where they're competing, you know, it's just interesting seeing, like, all these different people from around the world that shoot guns that we actually built. And, you know, this is what they love to do and what they spend their time on. So it was an amazing trip. Philippines is our next market. So that's where we want to head next. And so we don't have any guns in the Philippines next. I think it's where dissident was going to go in next. So,
yeah, it's all super exciting. You talked a little bit about expanding dissident's profile. People saw how well your guns performed. So did you get any converts, or are people more or less sticking to their guns, pun intended?
I think we've got quite a few converts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't, like, for instance, I mentioned the Philippines, we don't have any guns there yet. So they're open team. You know, they want to form a dissident open team, so to speak. There, a lot of people, you know, they see Scott perform. They saw Josh perform last time. They see the best shooter in the world shoot, you know, the best gun, so to speak, and they want to be a part of that. So, so for us, we like to have people shoot the best guns, and, it all comes down to who's going to perform, you know? So,
yep.
Internationally, shotguns are kind of a little bit easier thing to export than rifles and pistols, and they're accepted in a few more countries, but at the same time, sell guns internationally is not the easiest thing in the world. So, but certain markets, it's easier than others and so forth. So,
yeah.
I think a good number to reflect upon is not so much the 25% in the top 25, but 3 of the 5 individual medals for open of gold medals were all dissident shooters. 3 out of the 5 individual gold medals were dissident shooters. So it's pretty clear what the premier option is. And I can see a lot of people changing over to that pretty soon.
I'd like to give a shout out to Nate Smith too, because I mean, he came in third as a junior. That's huge.
He shot super well. Him and Varick both shot really well. I forgot exactly his overall, but it was still quite high. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was higher than I was. So yeah, Nate shot super well.
Very cool. Well, hey, we appreciate you guys, coming on here and recording and talking about your experience, talking about Dissident, Scott talking about your win. At this point, I'm just going to leave the floor with you guys. Anything else that you'd like to leave the listeners with? Scott, we can start off with you.
If you haven't gone to shot or to shoot a match internationally, go do it. It doesn't have to be Ipsy Shotgun. I'd prefer it were. You know, it's great. It's a lot of fun. But just go internationally. I know this was our teammate Ruben's first international match, and he had the time of his life, as far as I can tell. He loved it. You know, meeting new people, experiencing new cultures, and meeting, again, people who have the same interests that we do that are living halfway around the world. It's a very enriching experience.
Nice. Mike?
Yeah. What Scott said is absolutely right. So traveling and shooting has been quite interesting as far as meeting people from the same background or that think and believe a lot of the same things, you know, even though they are from different backgrounds. And so, you know, some of the only normalcy that that we had during all the COVID was the matches that still existed. You go there and you're like, wow, the world is still normal here at this one little spot or whatever. And so competing internationally is a lot of the same thing. Be involved in your local area if you can't do that. But, you know, other than that, you know, shooting's where it's at. Competing's where it's at.
Yeah, completely agree. Lan?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, through this conversation, thinking about it, this is, you know, 5 years ago is when, like Mike said, I quit my job and started this full time. So shooting's brought me to a lot of different places, and it's introduced me to a lot of different people. And I mean, it's been the best, you know, best decision I've ever made. So just if you're on the fence or you're scared or whatever, just get out there and do it. You know, the community is great, and we'll get you where you want to go.
Yeah, very well said. Well, thanks again, gentlemen. This was a lot of fun. Really, really great. Pick your brains about your experience. To our listeners, let us know how we're doing, and we'll catch you on the next one.
And I just want to say to everybody, Happy New Year, and I look forward to seeing you at a match in 2024.
Yeah, buddy. Look forward to seeing you too.